Monday, January 7th, 2019, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Jim Bertel in Washington. Coming up, the partial U.S. government shutdown is into week three with no end in sight. We'll have the latest. The new U.S. Congress started work last week with an historic class of new legislators.
The title of congressman is kind of surreal.
And we'll look back at the winners and losers at this year's Golden Globe Awards. It's all on today's International Edition. The partial U.S. government shutdown is in its 17th day. Over the weekend, Vice President Mike Pence led White House negotiations with Democrats. Joining me for the latest on the shutdown is VOA congressional correspondent Catherine Gibson. Thank you so much for being here. Are the White House and congressional Democrats any closer to a deal that will reopen the government?
Well, we really didn't see too many encouraging signs out of those meetings this weekend, Jim. You know, now we're entering this third week of the government shutdown. What we did hear coming out of those meetings is that President Trump had shifted his definition of the wall from concrete to steel in the hopes that that change will entice Democrats to be open to his policy proposals. I can tell you from being up on Capitol Hill, that's definitely a non-starter with a new House Democratic majority. They are not going to want to see this wall built. President Trump is going to need to offer some different carrots to entice them into that.
Well, that reminds me of the old phrase, a rose by any other name is still a rose.
As that's an excellent way of putting it.
Okay, well, President Trump is considering declaring a national emergency, which would allow him to build the wall without congressional approval. Explain to us what this means, and is it something congressional Democrats would go along with?
Right. So it's basically a way that President Trump could kind of sidestep all of this issue of tying border wall funding to the government funding bills. He could then not have to deal with congressional Democratic leadership and just declare a national emergency and appropriate that funding. Now, I can tell you right now that we're hearing from the House Armed Services Committee, Nancy Pelosi, the new Speaker of the House, they're saying that this absolutely is a non-starter for them as well, and that most likely if President Trump did make that move, it would receive a challenge in court for being unconstitutional and a case of executive overreach.
And the funding then would come from the Pentagon budget, right?
That's correct. That's okay. Where that funding would come from.
House Speaker Nancy Pelosi has her own plan to reopen closed agencies. What does this entail?
Well, that's what's going to make this week very interesting up on Capitol Hill, Jim. Nancy Pelosi is going to break up the different agencies and their need for government funding into separate bills, which will definitely pass the U.S. House of Representatives, and then will head over to the Republican-controlled U.S. Senate, where Pelosi is hoping that some Republican senators will move and vote for those bills, because they're facing pressure from constituents to reopen the government and get those government services going again.
You mentioned that we're into the third week of this partial shutdown, and it doesn't seem like anything has changed. President Trump is still demanding his $5 billion for a border wall or a border fence, whatever he wants to call it, and congressional Democrats are refusing to pay any part of it. What are people telling you about how this is eventually going to end?
Well, I think one of the interesting things we'll need to watch this week is the fact that this is the first week that government workers won't be receiving their paychecks. They were able to get their paycheck at the very end of the pay period, just before the government shutdown. So this is really the first week when we'll start to see some of the pain from this 17-day shutdown. People won't be able to pay their bills. They won't be able to pay rent, mortgage, credit card bills. All of that will really start to come through. I think we'll be hearing a lot more of what this impact is going to look like.
All right. Now, voters across the nation, they may not be so concerned about government workers getting their paycheck, but there have been other ramifications from this shutdown.
Absolutely. One of the big ones that House Democrats are thinking will push this shutdown and end it is the IRS. The IRS didn't receive its funding. And of course, here in the United States, we're nearing tax season. When many people get refunds on their taxes, they won't see those if the IRS isn't open to process their taxes.
And that will make people angry.
It will.
VOA congressional correspondent Catherine Gibson, thank you so much. I'm sure we'll be chatting again later in the week.
Absolutely.
This is International Edition. Among the top stories in the world, U.S. National Security Advisor John Bolton is in Turkey seeking assurances the country will not target Kurdish fighters allied with American forces. The government of Gabon has regained control in the capital after an attempted coup. Thai authorities say a young Saudi woman who was stopped in Thailand as she tried to flee to Australia to seek asylum has left the Bangkok airport and is under the care of the UN Refugee Agency. More than 30 people were killed in Afghanistan when Taliban insurgents stormed security outposts and a bomb blast ripped through a busy market on Monday. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on voanews.com and on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition.
This is Science in a Minute.
The authors of a new study published in the American Journal of Public Health have set out to dispel what they call myths surrounding other recent studies that suggest sitting for long periods of time now provides the same health risks as smoking. While study authors say they do agree that excessive sitting, roughly more than 8 hours a day, can increase the risk of premature death and some chronic diseases by 10 to 20%, it doesn't even come close to the hazards associated with smoking. The new study proposes that there is an approximately 180% increased risk of death of any cause from smoking. Terry Boyle, an epidemiologist from the University of South Australia and one of the study's authors, says the simple fact is smoking is one of the greatest public health disasters of the past century. Sitting is not, and you really can't compare the two. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
I'm Jim Bertel, and this is VOA's International Edition. U.S. and Chinese negotiators kicked off 2 days of trade talks in Beijing Monday. The world's two largest economies are seeking a resolution to an ongoing tariff fight. Both sides are expressing optimism. Dr. Veronica Taylor, professor of law and regulation at the Australian National University, spoke with my colleague Laurie London, who asked her if a deal was likely.
The most that you could hope for out of this round of talks would be a suspension of the current tariffs that have been put in place, which are suspended for the moment, and an agreement not to impose the threatened additional tariffs on both.
How much do you think this is hurting and will continue to hurt even worse the U.S., as well as China and possibly the rest of the world, if this goes on too long?
So on the tariff part of the dispute, the price tag is pretty high. Although they're suspended, you already have a total of $300 billion worth of tariffs in place. That's about $200 billion from the US side, about $60 billion, $130 billion from the Chinese side. But the projections are, you know, easily double that. So that's a direct effect on US business, but also on consumers, and then all the way down the supply chain across the globe. What's important is that I think the headlines are about tariffs, but what President Trump is actually taking aim at is Chinese industrial policy and also investment policy. So those are two other quite separate areas. And so even if there's a suspension of the tit-for-tat imposition of tariffs, which, by the way, are non-compliant with WTO rules anyway, that's unlikely to satisfy him. So there's plenty of other scope for ongoing areas of dispute. And it's really reminiscent of what happened between the US and Japan, if you remember, back in the late 80s and through into the early 90s, where the US was pursuing a trade war with Japan. And that was across, you know, lawyers, beef and oranges. So it was about having access to the services market in Japan and essentially asking Japan to dismantle non-tariff barriers.
So would you say that's the closest contextual background we have to anything like this?
It's the closest analog to what's happening now. But of course, what's different is between US-Japan trade disputes then and US-China now is, first of all, the quantum. Secondly, the degree to which the world economy is interconnected with China and interdependent with China. So there's a difference in scale. And then the other thing that's really different and that people forget about is that back when the US was pursuing Japan, the global trade governance system, the WTO and all of the other agreements that sit around that, were still functioning. Now they're largely not functioning, and President Trump has signaled that he's no fan of the WTO. So if we dismantle those conventional dispute resolution mechanisms, then it really is every country for itself in, you know, bilateral dispute mode, and that's not a good thing. I think also that, you know, the complaints about Chinese industrial policy are well taken. This is something that matters not just to the US but also to other OECD countries. But it's big, it's complicated, and it's not going to get resolved across the table in a week of talks.
That's Dr. Veronica Taylor, Professor of Law and Regulation at the Australian National University. Well, Pope Francis has addressed many serious global concerns in his address to diplomats at the Vatican. Sabina Castelfranco has more from Rome.
In his annual State of the World address to diplomats from 183 countries accredited to the Vatican, Pope Francis spoke of his concern about the resurgence of nationalist and populist movements and warned against adopting unilateral solutions to resolve the migration issue.
Sono consapevole che le ondate migratorie.
Francis said he realized the waves of migration in recent years have caused diffidence and concern among people in many countries, particularly in Europe and North America, and this has led various governments to severely restrict the number of new entries, even of those in transit. He added he did not believe partial solutions can exist for so universal an issue. Among the vulnerable of our time that the international community is called to defend, the Pope continued, are not only refugees, but also migrants. The Pope renewed his appeal to governments to provide assistance to all those forced to emigrate and to facilitate measures aimed at permitting their social integration in the receiving countries. The Pope said, efforts also need to be made to prevent individuals from being constrained to abandon their families and countries and to allow them to return safely and with full respect for their dignity and human rights. Syria, with its high death toll, was among the countries of concern mentioned by the Pope. He urged the international community to promote a political solution to the war there. The pontiff also spoke of the sexual abuse of children, calling it one of the plagues of our time. Pope Francis said a February meeting at the Vatican, during which discussions will be held by church leaders on how to move forward, would shed full light on the facts and alleviate the wounds caused by such crimes. The Pope did acknowledge that mistakes have been made in the past, but he promised to turn those into opportunities to eliminate the problem from the church and society. Sabina Castelfranco for VOA News, Rome.
Thank you, Sabina. A new U.S. Congress started its work in Washington last week with an historic class of new legislators, many without prior political experience. VOA's Carolyn Pursuti introduces us to two new U.S. representatives who are climbing the hill.
Right here, everyone.
Pete Stauber, Republican, professional hockey player, police commander, dad of four. He flipped his Minnesota district from Democrat to Republican. Katie Porter, Democrat, tenured California law professor, graduate of Harvard and Yale, single mom of three. With no political experience, she unseated an incumbent Republican. Both are freshman legislators, new to the U.S. Congress. VOA is following them for their entire first year in what we call climbing the hill, as in Capitol Hill, where U.S. representatives and senators make this country's laws.
Stauber.
Historically, these seats were mostly filled by white men. But November's election results made the 116th Congress, the most diverse in history. Katie Porter is among the largest percentage of women to be elected, at nearly 24%.
My very first issue that I want to work on is campaign finance reform. There's a bill that we're hoping to introduce as H.R. 1, the first bill that the House takes up.
And for Stauber?
The first bill would be about the jobs and the economy to keep this pro-growth, pro-jobs agenda going.
There's only 10 channels?
Yeah.
That's 10 more than you have at home.
Porter's three children will remain in California until the end of the school year, when they may move to the nation's capital. Stauber's children will stay in Minnesota with his wife, Jody. While in Washington, Stauber will share a townhouse with three other congressmen.
My room is it's about 10 by 12, and you got a bunk bed for family.
These freshmen know it will be a tough year. With Democrats controlling the House of Representatives, Pete Stauber knows that President Donald Trump, the man who campaigned for him, will be the target of investigations into Russian meddling and other matters.
I can't stop them from doing that, if that's the majority's will. But I don't think the American people, I don't think it's the American people's will.
Up until this point, life for these freshmen has been a blur.
Ms. Porter drew number 5.
The size and location of a Capitol Hill office depends on the lottery number pulled.
The thing I'm most excited about is the members' office, which is right here. I'm going to paint a bright blue color.
And she did.
And this color was called Old Glory.
The election was nearly 2 months ago.
Look at you, you're official.
And it's still taking a while to sink in.
The title of congressman is kind of surreal, you know, for me.
People ask me, who are you? I say, I'm a law professor, and I'm a consumer advocate, and I'm a mom, and this is an additional identity that I have to think about. So it is a change.
We'll see how they adjust to their new roles as we check in with them in a few months. Carolyn Pursuti, VOA News on Capitol Hill.
From Washington, this is VOA's International Edition.
Hi, I'm Larry London, and I'm the host of Border Crossings, inviting you to join me for one of the best hours of request music possible on the radio. We've got all your favorite songs by your favorite singers. You tell us what to play. It's requests and dedications, and it happens every weekday right here on The Voice of America.
Need a little straight talk? Want to make sense of the world around you? Ask a question. Hear what others have to say? If so, Voice of America has a variety of talk shows for you. Lifestyle, health, politics, youth, sports. We have it all. Tune into our discussion shows on the radio, TV, or the internet. They examine a wide variety of issues and world events not always covered by other media. VOA.
This is VOA's International Edition. Still to come, Hollywood rolled out the red carpet for the Golden Globes last night. We'll take you there. But first, the Consumer Electronics Show 2019 is revving up in Las Vegas. Reporter Chris Morris is there, and he spoke with Lori London about technology's biggest trade event. What's getting the buzz this year?
You know, what we're hearing a lot about is something called the digital age. We're coming to the end of the connected age, which is what we've had right now with the internet connectivity in the house. And we're coming into the digital age, which is when you have all of your devices talking together. The thing that's really going to make that possible is 5G. And so we're going to see a lot of devices here this year that can take advantage of 5G as that begins to roll out around the country.
Okay. So any specifics on what things specifically might be really big this year?
I think what we're going to see, according to the CTA, which puts on CES, you're going to see smart speakers. They're expecting a 7% boost in sales of those this year. So that's about an extra $3.2 billion in revenue. Smart watches, believe it or not, those are starting to get hot again. Those are up and be about 19%. And streaming services like Hulu and Netflix and things like that, but in a wider array, are expected to be up by 25% this year.
Wow. All right. Well, we got a lot to look forward to. And what about televisions? They seem to always be transforming themselves every year.
Yeah, televisions and CES kind of go hand in hand. It's you're going to hear a lot about 8K in the coming months. You hear about 4K a lot right now on TV sets. 8K is sort of the next step beyond that. That's going to mean bigger screens. There's an interesting statistic they talked about a little earlier today. 10 years ago, the average screen size of a TV was 36 inches. Today, it's 48 inches. Now, for 8K, if you want an optimal setting for that, they're saying 65 inches or larger is what they suggest. So you're going to see TVs get a lot bigger. You're going to see 4K continue to grow. And 8K is going to start to sneak out a little bit. But right now, there's just not a lot of content in 8K, but it's on the way.
What about smart TVs?
Smart TVs, they're still around. That's kind of tying into 5G, and it's also something that the streaming services that we discussed, it's a good way to kind of wrap all those things together. And it's a method for these services that are from different companies to all be used together. You don't have to have a separate app for Netflix, a separate app for Hulu. You can get it all onto your smart TV right now.
Reporter Chris Morris, who writes for Fortune, Yahoo.com, and others, speaking with VOA's Lori London. Hollywood's award season is underway, with the Golden Globes honoring the very best in film and television. The musical Bohemian Rhapsody and U.S. segregation-era comedy Green Book took home the top awards on Sunday during a night of upsets. Presumed favorite A Star Is Born wound up largely shut out, and Netflix streaming service won big. Reuters' Eve Johnson reports.
A night of upsets at the Golden Globes on Sunday, with Queen movie Bohemian Rhapsody grabbing top prize. It was a surprise victory over romance A Star Is Born, which had 5 nominations but clinched only 1 prize for Best Original Song. Shallow by Lady Gaga.
As a woman in music, it is really hard to be taken seriously as a musician and as a songwriter.
The Golden Globes kicks off the countdown to the Oscars in February. And in a break from a recent trend in awards shows, it was light on politics, with hosts Sandra Oh and Andy Samberg steering clear of controversy. Oh also walked away with Best Actress in TV Drama for her role in thriller Killing Eve.
I'd like to thank my mother and my father. Oma Appa.
The top prize for Best Comedy or Musical went to Green Book. And in another surprise victory, Glenn Close won Best Drama Actress for her role in The Wife over presumed favorite Lady Gaga.
Spider-Man.
The upsets kept coming with Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, which beat out strong contenders like Incredibles 2 to win Best Animated Film. But the biggest upset of the night went to Vice. The political comedy came in with 6 nominations, but went home with only 1 prize for actor Christian Bale, who starred as former U.S. Vice President Dick Cheney. One clear winner for the night, Netflix, the streaming giant finishing with 5 Globe trophies, including Best Foreign Language Film for Alfonso Cuarón's Roma. And finally, the first ever Golden Globe for a lifetime career in TV was presented to comedian Carol Burnett.
Does this mean I get to accept it every year?
The new award is named after her.
That's Reuters' Eve Johnson reporting. Actor Jeff Bridges received the Globe's honorary Cecil B. DeMille Award, celebrating his career in films. And one of my favorite TV shows, The Americans, won for Best Drama on Television. Much deserved. Well, that about does it for us today here on VOA's International Edition. Be sure to check up on all the latest news around the clock at voanews.com or on the VOA app. Thanks for joining us, and my thanks to our director, Patrice Martin, engineer John Dryden, and I'm Jim Bertel in Washington. Thanks for making us a part of your day.
The 2019 Voice of America calendars are in. This year's calendar features a variety of scenic photos that capture the beautiful byways of the United States. including magnificent photos of California's Big Sur Coast Highway, West Virginia's Highland Scenic Highway, and even the Cata All-American Road in Maine. Tune into Border Crossings and call to request a free calendar.